I mean, I think it matters.
Well, it matters, but it doesn't matter sitting there chatting about it.
Well, what are they going to do on
podcast
TV?
Comes up.
What are they going to do on TV all night?
No. No, that matters. I'm saying on here, it doesn't matter because it's going to come out on Thursday. The podcast coming out on Thursday. Us talking about it on Tuesday is not really relevant.
What if we talk about it like we're in the future? All right, folks, we are back on the Flexic.com Tea Time Podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host. As per usual, he is here. Scott, you are here right now.
I am here with some Halloween candy still left over. I got
coffin
some.
Chris. Okay, you know, let's get into
Chris.
Coffin Chris. Okay, we're going to get into hot golf talk right off the bat. Name your top four chocolate bars.
Oh, geez. I think we've done this a million.
Let's go three. Yeah. Top three, right?
I am Snickers, number one.
Did your daughter get some Snickers this year?
No, she didn't. No, she didn't go out. She's 14, so she had a sleepover with a friend. So okay. I would go Snickers, Twix.
Wow. Okay, we got a trend here.
And Eat More, of all things.
Eat More. Is that the one with the jelly thing down the middle?
Yeah, it's sort of, no, it's like chewy sort of dark chocolate with nuts in it or whatever. So.
Okay, all right.
But what about you?
So that's 3-2-1. Eat More is number one, or is it three?
Eat More is number three.
Okay. Number one, I got to go.
If you say Butterfinger, we're done.
Well, I don't think I could do a Butterfinger. I think I'd die. peanut right. allergy. So, yeah. No, actually, I would be done.
Good point.
Let's go with the number one. I'm going to go with the Kit Kat Chunky. That's that's my number one. Coffee Crisp is a number two there.
It is good.
And a Bounty Bar. Nice. A coconut. You know,
nice.
Bounty Bar. Now here's a question. Bounty Bar. It's two little bars in it.
Yeah.
Is that half of it, or are we talking two chocolate bars in that little package?
Well, that's one chocolate bar.
That's one okay, yeah. That's fair. I actually agree. I think it's just in two pieces. And if it was it would be called Bounty Bars.
Yeah, and I think the Bounty Bar is really a divisive bar because some people either love coconut or they don't love coconut. I think it's one of those ones where people are radical. They're one side or the other of the equation.
It's like the election tonight.
Ah, right? There you go.
I got that in the background just for the chaos factor. I actually am worried about our friends down south and really just hope that when the podcast comes out, as you heard off the top, which Scott doesn't even want to talk about it, when podcast comes out, who knows what the world looks like at this point. But we record this on Tuesdays, comes out on Thursdays, and I just hope everyone's safe down in the States because it's Houston Open week. And if they screw this up and the Masters gets postponed again, I'm going to have a problem. We're like, it already got moved to November. We're so close. We can make this happen. So let's just hang on for dear life.
We deserve to have a Masters, right? We deserve it.
Deserve. I think deserve is aggressive, but I'll allow it. But based off our hot golf talk off the top, I think we need something to talk about golf-wise.
Yeah, definitely.
We can talk about the Bermuda Championship. My boy, Brian Gay, who I've only spoke highly about on this program from our interactions before, picks up a win at 48, which is cool to see, I guess. Just a putting machine, that guy. And just a great iron player as well. Just doesn't hit the ball anywhere. It's nice to see different winners. Maybe this whole Bryson's ruining the game isn't actually true.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think we've talked about that a fair bit. I mean, there's so many different golf courses. I mean, we've got 48 events on a PGA Tour schedule. So, you know, they're not going to suit every player and every style. And frankly, hitting the ball in the hole on the putting green never goes out of style. It really doesn't. And as you mentioned, I mean, this guy is a putting machine. You know, it's his fifth win, but it's his first since 2013. Again, certain golf courses would suit his game more than others. But he's not immune to the distance effort as well. I mean, you know,
I'll say, like, from a year ago,
yeah,
when I stood beside the guy for 2 days and he had no idea I existed and still doesn't, you could tell this guy's put on muscle. He's put on some muscle. He was like stick skinny back, you know, a year ago, and just, you know, he's put on some, he was, maybe it was the extra small shirt he was wearing, but he's getting beefy.
Yeah, he's definitely been working out a bunch, doing a lot of work with his coach, Joe Mayo. They basically, you know, I saw some numbers posted basically since 2013 when he had that win. He's up 5 miles an hour in clubhead speed, up 10 miles an hour in ball speed. He's hit 173 miles an hour of ball speed in practice. His driving distance average has gone from 275 to 293. In that period of time. And you know what? I mean, it's not the total part of his game. Obviously, it's going to make a difference as far as his approaches and everything into the green. But again, it shows you can win in lots of different ways. And there was a lot of veterans on that leaderboard as well. I mean, it was a weak field. We know that.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, when a guy like Fred Funk makes the cut and he's only hitting it, you know, 235 off the tee, and 60 plus years of age, that's pretty cool as far as the golf ball not knowing how old you are.
No, that was the coolest story. There was a couple cool stories out of the weekend, Fred Funk being one of them, also getting to play with his son,
yeah, Taylor,
at the start of the week. Like, that's a cool story. You can't beat that. And now I'm blanking on a 70-year-old also putting in some work out on the Champions Tour. There was a story out there. Maybe I'm just completely blanking. Maybe I'm actually thinking of Fred Funk. Who knows? It's been a long week. It's been a long year. But let's go back to Brian Gay. This guy we've talked about, though, this guy's an absolute ATM. $25 million, roughly, in career earnings.
Crazy.
He has been on the tour full-time since 1999 and never even came close to losing his card. Like,
that's pretty damn impressive.
With five wins, he's obviously ready to go to the Champions Tour, just hanging on for dear life at this point. But, you know, he makes it work, and that putter, though, the putting stroke, when you actually look at it, it's a little, it kind of loops a bit, but the ball goes in the hole every time.
Yeah, it does. And the neat part is at 48, getting the win, he's now secured his status all the way to the PGA Tour Champions, which is great. You know, a lot of players that come off the PGA Tour will generally use that 2-year exemption they get from an ages 48 and 49 that they get to go play the Corn Ferry Tour to get ready. Mm-hmm. But in his case, he can play right out there on the tour, just like Stuart Sink, who, you know, we talked about on the show, who won at the Safeway at age 47. And he is now, you know, he played well again. It looks like his son is going to stay on the bag now. They've discussed it. Originally, he was going to be booted off. And then
what a shame. I am so sad for Kip. So sad for Kip Henry.
And then now Stuart Sink is actually only 4 points back of Bryson DeChambeau in the FedEx Cup.
That's
points
crazy.
List.
Now he's played. Well, he's played.
Yeah,
more.
Well, yeah. They've only had, you know, four events officially for 2021, but you know, it rolled over obviously from last year. But that said, you know, we're going to get into the heart of the season and other events and things like that, and things are going to change probably, but. You know, it's still kind of fun to think of as far as from a novelty standpoint at this point.
Oh, absolutely. It's pretty cool. That's for sure. Also, what was cool this week, Darren Clark picks up his first Champions Tour win. Obviously, we're big Darren Clark fans. Edge is out Bernhard Langer. And I saw that Gary Nicklaus back in the field. What tournament was it last year? It might have even been the Bermuda where we were looking at the field.
I think it was
like,
actually, yeah.
It was like Gary Nicklaus is in here. Like what is going on here? Just nonsense all around. Shout out to Jack for also making news this week. Seems like he's losing some fans. We're not going to dive too deep into that because, you know, we're Canadians. You guys figure out your own shit down there and we'll just make fun of it from up here. Masters coming up in a couple weeks. What do you think about this deal, this $150 food deal where you get like this stuff for
Mento
cheese sandwiches,
egg salad. Barbecue.
Yeah, like, yeah. So what's the furthest point in the United States from Augusta? Let's say Alaska. Say you somehow won tickets to it. Are you ordering that up to Alaska?
Hell no. There's no way. I mean, first off, if anybody, and believe me, there's lots of discussion about this. Again, another divisive topic, pimento cheese sandwiches. Slimy, gross, not a fan.
Yeah, you hate it.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, but I'd be very concerned about egg salad. Doesn't matter if they're expediting the shipping or anything like that, of that being transported, opening that up and eating that. Like, yeah, not my deal. I mean, $150.
I think the plastic cups are worth the $150 bucks.
Yeah, and you get 20 of those, so you know people are going to be flipping those onto eBay and whatever. They're going to pay for their $150 so that they can have their party. And again, this is only available to people that have tickets confirmed and they can access the patron shop. So it's limited to who can get it anyways. And I don't know if necessarily people want to do that. They might just go, you know what? And people do it every year. They make up, they get their own recipe for pimento cheese sandwiches. They make their own barbecue sandwiches. I don't know if you really need the cups or anything to really make for a party, but I'm sure lots of people will buy into it.
Yeah, that's fair. I would buy it just for the cups, as I said. The chips, I think those just go on the wall, just sit there. But you know, one time one of your buddies going to be just gooned up and just open those up and eat those at a later date. Maybe leave the egg salad there. Make the buddy open that up. And
I want the peach ice cream sandwiches, but obviously they don't chip very well.
I mean, there's gotta be it's the Masters. They probably invented a way for this egg salad to actually cook on its way there. So when it gets to your house, it's ready. It's perfect.
It's like a sub air system for the Koreans. They've got it for egg salad.
Yeah, no exactly. Doubt.
I mean, they've got the cash. So
it's Augusta National. Why not? What do you think about these hype films that keep coming out? You know, the guy painting the curb and cutting like the hole with the scissors. Like that could be anywhere.
It could be. That's the thing. People don't really realize that. I mean, they can just cut in some photos of the clubhouse and stuff like that. And you know what? It's just a fence being painted green paint. And, you know, people are actually getting excited about watching paint dry, which I guess tells you a lot about the brand that the Masters has created more than anything. I mean,
I think it tells us more about the year we've been in, where it's just like we've dealt with this. We've been waiting this long. Do you think the appeal will be as excited come April because it's so close?
That's interesting, actually, whether, you know, when we all of a sudden have a gap that's only, you know, 6 years or 6 years, 6 months, feels like 6 years, 6 months versus a year, whether it's not going to feel quite the same. But I think it will because it's springtime. I think because it's that traditional start to spring, especially if you're in the northeastern states or you're in Canada, you're in a lot of climates where April, you know, really signifies springtime. So I think people will still be excited because of that. But I mean, you know, this one could happen at, you know, I don't know, New Year's Eve and I'd be excited.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Just it could happen 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
But Tiger's serving steak and fajitas. I love this. Mm. I love this because this is the elitist of elite sitting in this room and they're eating with their hands and it's going all over their Armani suits. And
well, it's like when he had his hamburgers and milkshakes and stuff like that. Yes. You're right. I mean, those are the cool stuff. It's not, you know, you're not eating whatever Coquille Saint-Jacques or something, you know.
Totally.
It's really, you know, it's America really is what it is. It's really, you know, people returning to the roots as far as their food is concerned and having comfort food, which is really, I think people get a wrong impression sometimes about the Masters, even though there's a lot of pomp and circumstance. These are, you know, high end people that are, you know, well-heeled members and things like that. It's really a low key place as far as the environment
the
that they
town
want.
Itself is,
yeah, the town is certainly, but I mean, even the members, it's a simple thing. It's not about being this premium club. Most people obviously perceive it that way, but it's this little getaway place. And so there's some things there that are a little more simple than people think. You know, despite all the things that they do with their money, there's certainly some traditions and stuff that they like to stick to. So, but I think that part of that as well is those members sort of, you know, they're used to high-end stuff. Sometimes they just want to return to their roots. And I mean, for Tiger, you know, steak and fajitas, awesome.
I love it. That's a great choice. They're putting a tree in on 13 to replace the one that died a few years ago. You know, you kind of talked about that. They have this ability to bring trees from kind of anywhere. Why now? That's kind of my question.
No, that's not a one that hasn't been there. I mean, I haven't read too much up on this, and apparently it's just a rumor more than anything. The tree that died before was the one on 17.
Sorry,
this
that's what I was thinking. My bad.
Yeah, so you're thinking about the Eisenhower tree that was on my the corner, but apparently they've, rumor has it, and I don't know, I haven't seen it confirmed or anything yet, so I'm really curious to see, is that they planted one on the corner on 13 to sort of cut off the corner a little bit more. Granted, you know, those trees have grown up a lot over the years, but this one supposedly is going to force the players to go a little further right. And it's going to be like the Lon Hinkle tree, which won't mean much to you, but there's a U.S. Open in Inverness where a player played down a fairway, and overnight the USGA planted a tree. This is back in 1973, I believe. They planted a tree so he couldn't go that way. So I think this is the anti-distance, you know, we've been hearing all this stuff about, you know, Bryson trying to blast it and go all the way over, you know, to, the next fairway. But this could be the solution there, where they're trying to force him a little bit more to the right, if it's true. Like, again, I haven't got to confirm yet. I just saw a couple of postings about it. But I guess we'll find out very, very soon.
I guess we will. Bryson obviously saying he's going to have a 48-inch driver there. Phil can't get to 48 doing 47 and a half. Phil, why? What are you doing? You can't hit a 44-inch driver. Why are you going longer? Phil's going to hit it. So that tree won't even be in play because he'll be left of it. Because he can't even hit. This can be a disaster. I'll give you 5-1 if you want to take the bet that Phil doesn't make the cut.
You know what? I'm not going to touch that one because I think, he's been wild in the last little while, even though he had the, a couple wins on the PGA Champions Tour. But, going up to a driver that's a few more inches longer just for the sake of maybe creeping out a little bit more speed. I mean, I don't know. I think it'll be entertaining.
It'll be something.
But that's about it. It might be. He's got to remember there's not as many patrons there either to find his ball. Not that it's hard to find a golf ball at Augusta National, but this could be funny. Actually, we'll see what the weather brings.
Houston Open this week, just a kind of a reset for guys getting in ready for the game in the week away in Augusta. This tournament won't get you into Augusta. So, that kind of will get you there next year. So I guess you're not going to expect, this guy standing there excited because he's going to play Augusta next week. Like you usually kind of get the week before Augusta. DJ returns from his COVID diagnosis and hopefully he's all good. I think this is a huge week for DJ to see how, his game rolls out after a couple weeks off, locked up, right? I think the coolest part about this course, I don't know if you've ever been there, but I guess only $30 to play this golf course during the week. What do you know here? Because this is amazing that, the tour players are playing a true, true Muni.
Yeah, this golf course has been around a long time. Memorial Park, it's been a long time Muni in the Houston area, but it just underwent a huge renovation because really the PGA Tour has not been here since 1963. It really wasn't playable. So they've transformed it. And it's not just about a golf course as well. It's basically because it's a municipal facility, they built a driving range there. I mean, they've spent $30+ million in this renovation. Courtesy of the Astros Foundation. It's 1,500 acres. They've got walking tracks, a short course, first tee facility. Tom Doak did the redesign on the golf course. But it's an incredible legacy from this tournament and the fact that, just as you said, the public can go out there and then play it afterwards for under $40, which is amazing. And also, as well, the golf tournament has sort of gotten to the suburbs over the years, which has happened in most major cities as there's an urban sprawl. Now this brings the golf course and the facility and the tournament back to the center of Houston a little bit more, brings back the heart of the city. So kind of a cool initiative by the Astros Foundation to put in the money regarding it. And, at the same time, leaving a legacy that's beyond just this one week when it's accessed by PGA Tour players.
Yeah, I think this is what we'll want them to go back. People will, access it, be able to play it. And then, hey, like, I want to see that every single year. I love this type of stuff. It's like why we all like Bethpage, right? Because any of us can go there and play it. Yeah. It's why we like Pebble. Like, you actually can play these golf courses.
Yeah, Torrey Pines, the other muni that's used for the PGA Tour. The other side of it, too, is that, you know, obviously they have a limited amount of spectators this week. But, you know, as we go ahead and we get to a situation in years ahead that we're going to have spectators back, it allows that many more spectators to get there from the inner city as well, and not be the people coming from the suburbs and sort of the same old demographic, and allows sort of, you know, just a little bit of everyone to get there and see golf.
I love it. So our boy Ryan French, who runs A Case of the Golf One, the Monday Q Info Twitter account we've had on a couple times, we quote him a lot. He compiled a bunch of stories on Twitter over the last week from mini tours and qualifying school and yada, yada, yada. One of the stories came from Mark Silvers, who's former Big Break winner. He's our guest this week. We can't wait to chat with Mark about all his stories playing mini tours, what he's up to now, his plans once, you know, COVID wraps up. Is he still going to stick it out in golf? You know, he's getting up there in age to keep grinding out on the mini tours. Who knows? But I think it was just great time for us to find one of our favorite stories on here. Maybe create a new segment. Just, you know, maybe you and I can shoot texts out throughout the week, find funny stories we can dig up and tell them each week on the pod. I picked one out from here. Did you pick one out on Ryan's stories?
Yeah, I just started to go through them. I picked a little short one because I thought it was kind of a cute one that way. So mine might be a little bit shorter than the.
Yeah, why don't you go first, and then I'll. Right. Mine's a little long. The one that I like, and it's got a Canadian tie. You also submitted one, so maybe you're gonna have to tell both stories here.
Yeah, for sure.
Why don't you hit up your favorite one, and then tell yours real quick.
Yeah. So my favorite one quickly is I looked at it. I mean, one of the things about mini tours and things like that is that people begin to realize that this is small town golf in a lot of cases. It's all over the place. You know, this is not big city glitz and glam. And obviously this is an example of it. Just a quick paragraph came in for one player. He says, I checked into a motel in a small town in Oklahoma, getting ready to play in the Southern Oklahoma Open, and was told I could only have the room for two nights. It was booked up past that date due to a mule sale in town. Like, literally, the town is sold out for a mule sale. So, I mean, this is where these players are playing. This is where they're trying to grind it out, make their living on their way up to the big tours. This is what they have to deal with. They can't stay in the hotel more than two nights because, you know, there's all these people coming in to buy mules.
That's beauty. That is small town America that we love. Yeah. All right, what was your story before I tell mine?
All right. Well, mine was, I think I may have mentioned it before on this podcast, but it was a regional qualifier for Canadian Open many years ago. I think 91 or 92. Got paired with two guys, one guy who's a regular player on the Canadian tour. The other guy, I wasn't sure where he was playing. He, you know, he had all the gear. He was, you know, had this bag all decked out. He looked like, you know, he had his, you know, pro shirt on and his best shirt and his shined up shoes and things. And who knows? You never know who you're going to get at these qualifiers. And, you know, he had what I thought was maybe his spouse, girlfriend, wife, whatever, with him to caddy as well. Didn't think too much of it. Obviously, meet up at the tee. Everybody exchanged cards. I didn't have this guy's card, thankfully. But we go to ID Golf Balls. And, you know, traditionally, you know, there's some of the major brands that you're showing and obviously, you know, premium type golf balls. This guy says, I've got a Wilson Pro Staff Extra Spin. I'm like, I look at him with like side eye, like, what, huh? and he says to me, good ball, good value. I'm not kidding. You remember like this? I'm thinking, what have we got into? I looked over to the other guy. I think it's a guy named Tim Conway who played the Canadian tour for a while. And so we look at each other and, you know, we two hit. This other guy's going up third. He literally pops it up off the first tee. And all we see is his girlfriend, which we find out it is, says, nice height, honey. To his tee shot.
Hey, that's the positive voice you need in your ear.
Yeah. So it's just like, oh, what's this day going to be like or whatever? Again, I didn't have his card. I'm going to assume he was north of 100. I'm sure at that point, Golf Canada would give you a letter if you're over a certain amount, you know, probably 78 or 79 or something like that. They would say, sorry, don't come back again or whatever. And later in the round, we were almost done. I think it was the 16th or 17th hole. It was a par three. This guy, you know, obviously he hadn't ingratiated himself with both of us as we're playing. He was extra slow, having troubles. Clearly he was not in his element and probably shouldn't have been there. He topped the ball off the tee on this par three, and it literally just dribbled up in front of the tee box. And then we start walking ahead. We look back and we're waiting for him to play. He is now getting a new yardage. And Tim says to him, hey, you're 25 yards ahead of where you were the last time. Hit the effing ball. And that was pretty much it. So,
that was it for the day. So he didn't make it. I never played the Canadian.
Don't think so. I don't even remember the guy's name, but I certainly remember the
score. I wonder if we can find those scores. We should try to track that down. All right, I'm going to read this story. I don't know who sent it in, but sent it in to @acaseofthegolf1. If you're not following it, you better now. All right, here's a story from 2018. So this guy says, flew up to Canada for Mackenzie Tour qualifier in Winnipeg. I had to make the cut so I didn't have to go to pre-qualifying tournament for Korn Ferry Q School and could go straight to first stage. Ended up qualifying on Monday, so didn't think to book travel until the cut was made or missed. Task one complete. So he says, next week was Dakota's tour event in Fargo starting Friday. It was a 4-hour drive away from Winnipeg, wait listed for the event. So he's one of the first alternates. Figured there would be buses, shuttles, a train, or cheap flight. So he made the cut in the Mackenzie event. Task two complete, right? He needs to make the cut so he can get to that stage of qualifying school. So he didn't think to book travel to Fargo till Sunday evening. Sunday comes around and find out there are no forms or transportation to Fargo besides renting a car with a $1,000 drop fee across the border.
Wow.
Or he could take a $500 Uber or taxi. Obviously, if you play the Mackenzie Tour event, you don't make a lot of money. So he says, my check from the event wouldn't cover any of that. So he waits it out in Winnipeg, hoping to find something that doesn't exist. So the only flight is $750, and it connects through LaGuardia. Monday,
he's got to go to New York.
Yeah. Monday nice. Comes, nothing, and all his friends leave. Tuesday, nothing. He's still at the Quality Inn in Winnipeg, just wasting money. Wednesday afternoon, decides to download Tinder and bribe girls to drive him to Fargo. So he says, $100 and I'll fill up your gas and buy you breakfast and lunch. He gets a few matches. They're on the fence, but they don't want to drive a random guy across the border. Finally gets a match that messages right away. She needs the cash. She's willing to risk it all. She says she can come to the Quality Inn after work. Come to find out that's 3 a.m. She gets off work at the quote factory. 6 a.m. we hit the road. Get to Fargo by 11 for a 9-hole practice round. Border patrol agents were extremely weary of this situation. Next day, the guy, because he was on altered, a guy drops out of the tournament, no shows for his tee time, so he gets in as the first alternate. That is the mini tour life I love. This is what's great about it. And this is the type of stories I can't wait to chat with Mark Silvers about. As I mentioned, former winner of the Big Break, current mini tour player. Without further ado, Mark Silvers. All right, folks, we'd like to welcome to the podcast Mark Silvers. You might remember him as winning the Big Break. Now living the mini tour life down in Georgia. You down in Georgia still, Mark?
Yes. Yeah, and it's in the 50 degrees Fahrenheit here, which is freezing for us. So, you know, just trying to stay warm.
Well, we'd probably take that right up here right now. I think it's about 5. Also, I can already hear my voice is going to do your accent. I'm going to try my best not to. I just have this problem with the South. I just take on the accent. Let's talk about. Go ahead.
If I hear y'all slip out,
oh, I say y'all all the time. We're good. That's nice. Normal. Right, yeah. It's the safer thing to say these days, unfortunately.
yes. Let's
talk about what's going on with you these days. Mini tour life. Obviously, COVID probably took a big hit for you. So, have you been playing much this year? And what's the plan?
Yeah. So it's been a weird year. I guess I'll always have status up there in Canada just because I won up there a few years ago. But yeah, I was kind of battling some putting heebie-jeebies at the end of last year and wasn't really sure what I was going to do. Honestly, I had a couple of commitments early this year, some pro members and pro-ams and things like that, that truthfully I was going nuts, man. I played up in Canada last summer and, man, I just striped it and I had the yips. Like I missed a couple of 3-footers every round. I still made a bunch of cuts, but it was just super aggravating. And right before a pro member, I grabbed just a random putter I'd never putted with and tried to putt cross-handed because it felt so awful that it actually cured my yips. So played well in the pro member, signed up for a couple of mini tour events, in Florida. I think I had a second, a third and another second loss in a playoff. And I was like, all right, let's go. And then COVID. So, you know, I'm kind of in that age bracket / experience bracket / not on the web.com or Korn Ferry or the PGA Tour, where it's like, man, what are you supposed to do? Yeah, I'm not 25 where I can just kind of wait it out. So I don't know. It's a little up in the air about what to do with them canceling Q school, but have not played much at all in the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, without the carrot of Q school, I mean, we've talked to a number of guys on the show. It's kind of hard to get motivated in some ways because you look at the goal being that much further away, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I had at the time when it was web.com tour status for 4 years. So that's, you know, that's what drives me. You know, the younger guys who haven't had that experience yet, you know, that's what they're working towards. But kind of once you get there and fall back, if that's not available, it's like it's very hard to get the motivation to kind of grind it back out on the mini tours and hold out for another whole year. So it's facing some interesting decisions over the winter, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. So what have you been doing in the meantime? Anything for work, you know, teaching golf? How do you stay busy?
You know, I've been staying busy, doing a little bit here, a little bit there to make some money, but I am full on hooked. I don't know if you guys play it in Canada on pickleball. So my girlfriend is a pickleball pro and we've been dating for just under a year. And I kind of got into it over last winter, but you know, whatever, but it was one of the first things that we could do. And I am absolutely hooked.
So are you like getting into money games or
something? I was going to say, you're like going to turn pro too or what?
I'm not there yet, but I am ascending the ranks.
All right, let's bring her on because I want to know more about what a pickleball pro, like are you traveling? Tell me about this.
She played like 15 events last year, but she started she convinced our club in Savannah to put in courts and now it is so much more popular than anything. It's exploded. It's totally taking over the whole, they want to get rid of more tennis courts to put in more pickleball courts. And it is just, it's taken over the world.
Big break pickleball.
I'm telling you. It is.
That's a plot twist I didn't see coming.
I'm full of them.
Would you say your fitness level is better now that you're playing more pickleball, running around
a little bit? I weigh what I did in college. Wow. I literally, now granted, I weighed myself during college football, into college football season last year. So that's not really when I'm at my fighting weight, with all the wings and beer and, you know, all that crap. But I started playing and I lost 15 pounds before I even could blink.
Wow. Question for you. I'm really interested because I have no idea how, but I mean, obviously in golf, we have a handicap. How do you know, you know, what level another player is at pickleball? I mean, are you getting close to scratch or are you?
Getting there. I'd say I'm a single digit. No, it's like, and I've never played tennis or anything before, but I guess you have levels. You start at like a 3-0 or something like that. And the highest before pro is 5-0. So you go up in half point increments. You go, you know, 3-0, 3-5, 4-0, 4-5, 5-0. And then at 5-0, you can either play professional or so.
You know what? I don't think it's that unusual of a crossover, because if people know, in the last couple of years of the PGA merchandise show in Orlando, the racket sports show is on at the same time. So mm-hmm. you cross over and go over to that hall. I don't, but well, some people do.
But saw Mark.
Yeah, I guess it would have read yeah. to you.
You might. Yeah, you might see yeah. me in the next one. Yeah. But yeah, it's I'm telling you, it's taken over, man. It's fastest growing sport in the world, and you know, people play and get hooked. It's crazy.
That is crazy. Let's go back though. Let's get on to your golf career here. You first came into, you know, a lot of our lives on the Big Break back in the day. We had David Byrne on here. Mm-hmm. I don't know, one of our early episodes of this podcast. David will tell you as much as he can that he won the Big Break. How often do you bring up the fact that you won that tournament, I guess?
You know, I don't bring it up very often, but I still have some friends that anytime they introduce me to somebody, they're like, they will try to embarrass me by saying, I'm sure you've seen the Big Break. Yeah, most people are like, the hell is that? But no, it was fun. And every now and then somebody random, it is always at the most random times. We'll be like, hey, did you win a Big Break? Like, yeah. Like I was playing in this event, at this new place called Ohoopee Match Club mm-hmm. down here, right outside of Savannah, which is unreal. And I've played there a handful of times, and this is the first time I'd ever seen anybody else there. And literally I'm on the driving range and this guy walks up. He's like, hey man, I know this is going to sound really creepy, but we're from Oklahoma. My buddy back at home is a huge Big Break fan. Can we take a picture? I was like, all right, which one of my friends put you up to this? And they're like, no, we're dead serious. I was like, man, this is insane. I could not believe it. I was convinced somebody was screwing with me.
Well, me and my buddies used to actually get together and have beers and watch it. And we were bummed when it got canceled. I thought it was a great show.
It was a great show.
Let's talk about from your perspective though. Like, what was it like being on the show? Obviously, I think a lot of people think, you know, the best golfer always wins it. It is a trick shot competition at times. But what was your experience and how would you describe, you know, the inner workings of it?
You know, I was really lucky with mine because I feel like of the handful of Big Breaks that I did watch, we had the most real golf. I mean, obviously we had the flop wall and we had, you know, the tic-tac-toe and all that stuff, which we all got dominated by a Canadian. Mm-hmm. That was Lap. Yeah, with nice. The saucer pass. Nobody could beat him.
You got him back though.
fair enough. Mine was a good season because it really was. It was a lot of actual golf. And but yeah, people don't realize that it's, you know, the show looks so seamless. It's edited so well. And you know, sitting at home kind of armchair quarterbacking, you're like, man, how's that guy hit that shot? It's like, well, he's probably sitting on a bench for an hour and a half. And then you jump up and you got eight cameras in your face and you have to hit one shot that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are going to judge you on. So it really is. I was in this weird zone that whole couple of weeks where just nothing bothered me. And I wish I could have bottled it up and figured out how to do that more often. But for whatever reason, I don't know. I was in the zone and was able to stay in the zone for two straight weeks. And, but it is some nerve-wracking stuff because literally it's like you think about a first tee shot of a tournament and you're kind of jittery. It's every shot that you hit on that show is that shot. And truthfully, the least nervous I was probably in the finale because you actually got to play
golf
you know, where it wasn't just start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. So So yeah, it was a crazy experience, and looking back on it, definitely one of the coolest things that I've been able to do, much less be able to pull out of there with a win.
Now, do you stay in touch with anybody? I mean, you mentioned James Lepp there. We know him pretty well over the years, but who do you stay in touch with from the cast or from, you know, the All-Star? You were on the All-Star one, correct?
You're not? I did the Invitational.
Right. Okay.
I wasn't on the All-Star, every five seasons or something, they would have they invite right. a bunch of people back. I was never on one of those. Okay. I think if you won one of those, you couldn't come back on, but they did. Actually, down here in Georgia, they did an Invitational, which was kind of an interesting event. But yeah, I mean, shoot, I was in Vancouver last summer and hung out with Lepp for a couple of nights. I mean, we still stay in touch. And Rick Cochran had been a buddy of mine. We played the mini tours together. We played the Web.com tour together. I would probably say I still at least yearly talk to probably at least half of them. Cool. We had a great group of guys. We really did. It was a cool show.
Yeah. Looking back on it, was there anybody on there where you're like, you know, they might not win this week, but that's a player, right? You think back to Lepp's game. The guy was chipping like he was holding a hockey stick, right? He could hit a golf ball real well, and he was a good player. But it was like, you're going to have to figure out how to chip right if you're going to make it after this. Was there anyone on this show that you're like, this guy's got a chance and maybe just never made it?
There was a bunch of guys. Lepp, obviously, you know, he had kind of retired from professional golf, and he started out the show a little slow, but you could tell he was kind of getting back to when you watched him play, you're like, okay, I see why you were the best college player in the country and won a couple of professional events as an amateur. Rick, I already knew Rick. I already knew he was a good player. We played the Hooters Tour together. But there were some sneaky guys. There was a guy named Mike Tobiasen who was a club pro and a mini tour pro, and he was really good. I think he played in the U.S. Open, kind of a nondescript guy, got eliminated maybe like fourth, but I was like, man, this guy's really, really good. And I don't think he ever really tried to give it a go full time, which I was kind of shocked at because I liked his game a lot.
And you did give it a go full time and obviously, you know, had somewhat successful career winning in Canada, playing a lot in Canada. We live just outside of Kingston. There was an event called the Great Waterway Classic, one of the first events I was able to pick up a golf bag and carry it for somebody else. You ever get to play around this area back in the day?
Yes, that is actually the tournament that is responsible for me winning on the Canadian Tour. Okay. Indirectly.
Let's hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So in 2014, I had conditional web.com tour status. And so at the beginning of the year, I was chasing Mondays and shooting a lot of 67s where I had to pack my bags and go home. And I was just going nuts chasing Mondays. And finally, I used my status to go to Canada because they have 10 spots every week for web.com tour guys that aren't in the current event. So I was like, I'm beating my head against the wall. I've got to go play some real golf. So played the tournaments out west and then got like a third of the way through the season. And I got an exemption into Boise or somewhere like that, made the cut, kind of got halfway into the reshuffle, was kind of jumping back and forth between Canada and the Corn Ferry or web.com tour at the time. And I got like three or four more starts and, I was in Knoxville and I made the cut, but I didn't make enough money to qualify for the last event, which was the money list event. So I was like, screw it. I'm just going to go back up and finish the season out in Canada. I'd missed like half the season, but, I was like, you never know. So I went back home from Knoxville and a buddy of mine who was also playing Corn or web.com tour, we were going to go up and play the last few events together. So I believe the pro-am was on Tuesday. So we were just like, hey, you just want to go home, take Monday off, and just fly out Tuesday afternoon and get up there Tuesday night. We'll just play a quick practice round Wednesday, which in theory sounded great. So we fly to DC or something like that. And our flight gets canceled into Toronto. So we had to sleep there. And then they rebooked me on the wrong or a flight at the wrong airport or something crazy. I ended up having to fly to like Newark and then up or something like that. He flew direct. We get up there and none of my bags show up. So at this point, it's,
you know what? I think I remember this. You had a call out on Twitter for people to find you golf clubs to use, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That is exactly. So anyway, so finally, after staying at baggage claim for a couple hours, they're like, we're really sorry. We cannot find either one of your bags. So I called, Scotty Pritchard or somebody like that, the tournament director. And I was like, hey, we were supposed to get in last night. Like I need to register. We can be there, you know, late afternoon, but I don't have any golf clubs or clothes, but I still want to play. I'm here. So I get there to register and they're like, okay, Scott Pritchard has his golf clubs up here. Do you want them? And I was like, I mean, at this point,
better nothing.
I don't really have a choice. So they were like these beat up old Titleists. Like it was, they had S shafts in the woods and the irons were old and had like S300s.
At least the sweet spots hadn't been hitting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. it was well scattered. And so like one guy had, I was checking in. He was like, man, I got an extra lob wedge or something like that. And I was like, well, screw it. I'm going to roll with it. And so there was one club in there. It was a Rocket Balls hybrid that was like 17 degrees or something like that. It was the only club with that had an X flex in it. And so I remember I hit it off the tee on like number 10 and made par. And I was like, all right, let's go. And 11 was like this 225 yard par three. Mm-hmm. Long holes, kind of
you know
back
it well.
Into the wind. Yeah,
yeah. Home, and, that's my home track. So, you're talking about.
Oh yeah,
awful.
Yeah,
so hole, but continue. Yeah.
So it's like the pin's in the back, and he doesn't have three irons. So I'm like, man, I can't. This four iron's going to go like 200 yards. So I was like, I'm just going to try to bunt this Rocket Balls hybrid, and it came off like a bazooka. I hit like 50 yards over the green.
That was the one that went in the pond.
Into the pond.
Yeah, yeah. It was all the way down. I think it was in the edge of the pond down there. I think I made double. And I was like, man, this is ridiculous. So I tried to hit the three wood and I couldn't hit it. I tried to hit the driver and I couldn't hit it. So I just hit that Rocket Balls hybrid off of every tee because I hit it like 270. And luckily out there, that was about all you needed.
Well, yeah. So,
but the key was that he had this old Odyssey number 9, like a Phil Mickelson kind of white hot Odyssey number 9 that looked like it might have been the original. And I made everything with it. And I ended up birdieing 18 on Friday afternoon to make the cut on the number. And so by this point, I think somebody had given me a backup driver. And I think I had a set of wedges, but I shot like 75 or something on Saturday. And my clubs finally came in. They had put them with the wrong airline. That's why they couldn't find them. So they finally found them. I'd been wearing my buddy Brent Long's clothes for 3 straight days. And when I gave Scott his clubs back on Sunday, I was like, dude, I've never putted with a putter like this, but I made everything. I cannot believe I made the cut with your golf clubs because these things are total pieces of shit. And he was like, well, shoot, I know the Callaway rep up here really well. Do you want me to see if I can get you one? I was like, I would love that because I haven't been putting that well this summer. So the next week was it like Wildfire or something like yep. that. And putt it, hit it good. Putted like complete crap with my putter. The putter, the number nine came in that week and it was all jacked up. So I got it cut down, and from there we went to Nova Scotia, and on the back nine of my practice round, my last practice round, I was like, screw it, I'm just going to putt with it. What's the worst that could happen? And I made everything that week and won. And that got me into the Tour Championship, which I finished fifth, which got me 10th on the money list, which got me back to Q School Finals, which got me a full web.com tour card that year.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, yeah, so I remember that now that I think about it. And it's funny, because at the time I worked at the golf shop, like easily could have helped you out at that point. I don't know what was going on. That's unfortunate.
I was sitting in the media room and all my shafts are X Flex.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was, I
worked
was
out
so,
okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Now, I mean, it, but yeah, I mean, indirectly that tournament got me, my web.com tour card for the next year, because I've been putting it so bad that year. Well, not bad, but not well. I needed kind of a spark, and yeah, putting that putter, I putted with that putter that Scott Pritchard got me for the next like 3 or 4 years.
Scotty, what a guy. We've had him on the podcast a couple of times. Yeah. Great guy. So we'll have to bring
legend.
Up that, bring up that story next time we chat with him. You still have that putter?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I, that one's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
The
yeah.
do not sell collection.
I love it. I love that you have your own Hall of Fame. So do I. It's my fitter of the year bag behind me from
nice.
2014.
Nice.
Never gave out another one after that. Well, let's just talk about your time in Canada though. Like, from a guy from the South in Georgia, had you been to Canada prior to coming up here, or was it kind of a culture shock? 'Cause you still hear from people like, oh, can't, like, did you have any idea what Canada was?
I had no idea. But honestly, I freaking love Canada, because I like to think that people in the South are nice and hospitable, and that 100%. is how your entire country is. Everybody is so freaking nice. The cities up there are awesome. You know, my first experience in Canada, no offense to Kingston, was Vancouver, which is like my favorite place on the planet. I mean, it is the coolest city. I mean, you've got beaches and mountains, and you know, the weather relative to most of the north is insane. And I mean, I was like, man, this is unreal how cool this is. And then, you know, you just kind of make your way across, and then you end up over in Lake Country and see these crystal clear lakes. And I mean, it was just, there was nothing other than the taxes. Nothing that I could ever complain about being up in Canada.
Oh, I just got crushed on taxes when you won.
Oh God, it was yeah. Between the dollar being stronger at the end of the year and the taxes, I was like, where did all my money go?
Hey, you got a putter out of it.
So. Yeah, you got a nice putter.
Yeah, that's right. A sweet putter.
I do agree with you though. My trips in the South, and last time I was down there, I was in Virginia at the Greenbrier doing some looping, and like everyone is so nice. Same thing.
Yeah.
Like they want you to come to their place for a drink after. They want to take care of you. They, you know, want to drive you home. And like, you know, for me, it's like, whoa, stranger danger. I'm not hopping in your car, but they like we ended up going.
That's how we are.
Me and this buddy from Australia that caddies out there, we ended up going to this private bar. You had to knock on the back door properly to get in, drink all evening. And it was just like, oh yeah, you guys are in the neighborhood. We're going to take care of you. No, didn't pay for a bill. And it was like, I get what you're saying, but like, no, I think the people in the South are almost nicer until you disagree with them, I guess. Then that's when things go wrong, right?
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, we are Americans.
Speaking of the South and your state, it's a big week next week. I wanted to ask you, you know, for a guy who is from Georgia, what's the Masters week mean for you? Especially, it's weird this year having it in November, right?
It is. Yeah. I'm, you know, as growing up in Georgia, you know, Augusta National is like Mecca. And I mean, from the time I was 10 years old, I could tell you every bunker on every hole at Augusta National. So, you know, and obviously we know it as spring and azaleas and everything. So I'm very fascinated to see how the golf course plays in the fall. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be softer, a little hairier, but you never know, it's Augusta National. They, you know, they might figure out a way to make the ryegrass brick hard in November. You can't ever underestimate them. It's like Tiger in a major.
Yeah, we said because they're selling these packages, $150 for the food, right? And I said they'd find a way to get that to Alaska and it'd still be fine,
Without a doubt.
I don't count them out. Have you ever played the course?
I've played it twice.
All right, yeah. Let's talk about that experience. You grew up there. I think like for us, it's like we have this tie to it, but for you, you grew up in Augusta, or not in Augusta? Sorry, in Georgia. Oh. Like, what was the tie the first time walking in, and how'd you even get there?
So in college, one of the past presidents, I went to University of South Carolina, which is only an hour and a half from Augusta. One of the past presidents was a Gamecock, and we had the team over 1 year. And I was absolutely terrified because Hootie Johnson was one of the most intimidating human beings I've ever been around. And not only is he intimidating, but as a 18 or 19 year old kid walking into Augusta National, putting your stuff in the locker and kind of being shuffled around, and you get to the first tee and I was shaking so bad. I can't believe I made contact with the golf ball. And I'll never forget it. I piped one, you know, Mr. Johnson was standing there, hands on hips, watching us all tee off, and piped one down the middle. And I hit a nice iron shot in there to like 30 feet. And I think I hit my first putt 20 or 25 feet by. I think I made like a 3 or 4 footer for a 5. It was amazing. I mean, you can't even, you know, everybody's like, what'd you shoot? And truthfully, I couldn't even tell you. I mean, I was just in such awe walking the fairways, looking around, remembering all the shots I'd seen on TV from everywhere on every hole. I couldn't even focus. I probably shot 90. And then I got invited up by a member maybe 2-3 years ago, was going up, and for whatever reason, there was an opening and somebody suggested that he invite me. So I got to go up thinking like, all right, you know, I'm a professional golfer. Like, I've played in a couple of US Opens, like, I'm going to play this for real. And it was the exact same thing. I probably shot 90. I was just looking around and I was like, yeah, this pin, I remember. So, you know, and I'm not even like a big golf historian or, you know, nerd or anything like that. It's just that place, man. It's so over the top special, just from going up as a kid with my dad when we could find tickets, and just watching it every year on TV, like no other place. I've played a lot of really cool places and nothing compares to the feeling I get walking on that property.
No, it's the place where everyone says like, I'll max out my credit card. Let's make it happen. Are you an emotional guy? 'Cause I know me, I think I would hold it together till the 18th hole. And then it would just be like, I'm never doing this again. And they just be like, I just fell in love and I'm never getting this. I'm never seeing her ever again. Like, she's moving on to better things. Mm-hmm. Are you an emotional guy? Did you hold it together for the 18 holes?
I held it together because I need, you know, if you get invited up there, you have to hold it together. It's not an option. But yeah, man, I mean, it's just standing on those, remember and watching Tiger as a kid and, you know, the Jack Nicklaus highlights and all that kind of stuff. And just being, I've played in a lot of big events and around a lot of, you know, big players. And I just, there's no feeling, you know, that can compare to just a random Tuesday at Augusta National. It's just, I'm not a super emotional guy on the golf course, but certainly that tugs at the heartstrings.
So next week, you know, how much of the coverage are you going to be watching? Every single second? I mean, there's a lot of digital options now. You can do your My Group. You can pick out who you want and stuff like, which is a lot different than it used to be. But yeah, are you going to be glued?
I will be glued on TV. Probably not. I'll watch the scores. Probably not a ton of digital stuff. But I honestly, I could not tell you. I watched the last hole of the senior tour event last week because Gene Sowers was playing well. But I couldn't tell you hardly any. Since COVID started, I haven't watched any golf outside the majors. But I will watch from if I have time or can figure it out.
Around your pickleball schedule.
exactly. Now pickleball takes precedent, but no, I will be glued. I want to watch every shot at the Masters. It is my favorite week of the year. And now we get two of them in like 6 months.
It's going to be crazy. So you obviously didn't watch a lot, but if you had to make a prediction, and we'll leave it at that, who do you got this year to pick up a green jacket?
Man, you know, I'm in a pick'em league. So I pick and I follow it. I don't watch a ton. I've got kind of a weird pick. This is a weird year, and I'm going to go with Louis Oosthuizen.
Wow.
That guy plays good there every freaking year, and he plays good in the majors. And the guy has not won a whole lot. He's going to be in my pick'em. I'm going deep.
I love it. I actually, I think a few weeks ago was one of my dark horse picks in one of our segments we had. So making me sound like a genius, and we're both going to look like idiots come Sunday after the Masters.
Probably.
Mark, we really appreciate you coming on. I think you got to do some stretching. You got a big pickleball game tomorrow morning with the girlfriend. Where can people find you so we can catch up and make sure when you decide to come back to Canada to give it another run? Where can we follow you in case we need to give you some golf clubs?
Well, I am on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I am trying to highlight both my golf career and my burgeoning pickleball career.
I saw the medal shot.
You like that?
Yeah.
played my first pickleball tournament 2 weeks ago. Brought home the gold. It was big.
Picked up the win in the first one. All right.
Picked up the win. Yeah. Moving on up.
I love it. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We look forward to catching up, and hopefully we can catch up in the future in person. Maybe grab a round of golf at Augusta. You still got that member's phone number?
I'll see what I can do.
Thanks, Mark. We appreciate it.
Yeah. No, thank you, guys. This was fun.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for joining us on that interview. I think he's going to be one of our favorites. I doubt that is the last time we have that man on this podcast. I mean, pretty much if you ever come on, you're welcome on again. And we do like to recycle guests, but only our favorites. And that is in my top five right now. What a great dude.
Yeah, he was awesome. I'd be willing to, branch out into a pickleball podcast just for him. So it's funny just to catch his updates on that. But that was kind of funny. Like I said, it was a turn I wasn't expecting, but great guy, great stories. And obviously he had an appreciation for Canada. And it's always good to hear those inside stories from those players about, things that happened to them during the course of their playing careers. So.
It's funny. He was telling that story about the time when he came up here, and I remember it like way too well. Like, and I'm actually trying to see here. I believe I tweeted him back then,
saying you had clubs or something.
Yeah, being like, I got it, and I think he said like, it's all good. I appreciate it. I got some now, and just I had never even thought about it until this very moment when he brought that up. So just a funny story. Small world, and crazy how I've been trying to think more positively, right? And this idea like things happening to you, but things happening for you, and like
they happen for a reason, right?
That happened for him. So he had this putter that literally changed his golf career for the next couple of years, and thanks to our boy Scotty Pritchard, come full circle. It's our guy. So that's awesome. Thanks, Mark, again for joining us. And you know, we're gonna grab more mini tour stories every single week. We're gonna do some searches. We have some other ideas of like caddy stories. Maybe we'll mix it up. Maybe we'll throw in some mini episodes here and there of those type of things. But that's what we love. That's what got us into this podcast in the first place. So we can't wait to bring more of those. But every single week we bring the mailbag to you. So Scotty, why don't you open up the mailbag and tell me what we found this week?
All right. Well, we're Masters heavy this week, as you might expect, especially with the that major coming up next week. Came in quickly, so I appreciate it. Everybody keep sending those in. We'll start with one related to the Masters. If you were in the field at the Masters in 2020, who would you want to be paired with?
Wow. Let me go through. I think everyone would be like, give me Tiger. Like,
yeah, I think I don't so know too. If I, but I think I you got to be a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's actually what I want. I want to be able to enjoy the day and like, we all, you know, we're all a fan of Tiger. Tiger doesn't want to talk to you. He has zero interest.
True.
Like you know,
especially
I said
the Masters.
I said Brian Gay didn't act like I existed. Tiger Woods, if I played with him, I wouldn't exist. He would actually make me not exist. So my first guy, I want Angel Cabrera in my group.
I think
that guy is an absolute beauty. I think just hearing him hit
I know who you're going to pick, and I'm not even I know where you're going to go. I know it.
Who am I going second?
Yeah, Paul Casey.
Paul Casey.
I know you too well.
I would struggle. I would struggle out there. I would ask him a lot of like forearm exercises. I'd ask to take photos with his forearms. Like it would just be like me beside his arm, like his arms. If you ever watch It's Always Sunny.
I have those photos of him.
Yeah.
You've seen the one I have.
Yeah, holding up the world. Yeah.
Or like, the golf ball. Yeah.
If you watch It's Always Sunny, they have this skit of this guy. He's really self-conscious, but his hands. So he gets people to put their hands over his hands in photos. I would have Paul put his arms over. Yeah, like. Yeah, and then I'd get kicked. I'd never be able to go back. So, yeah, my picks on Angel Cabrera and Paul Casey, two completely opposites. One for just to hear him hit irons, and the second to watch his form. So, you?
I'm going to start with, you know, I'm the same thing. I don't think I'd want to play with, you know, a Tiger. I mean, it sounds cool and everything, but I want to enjoy myself, as you said. And if obviously everybody is there, it's different this year. There's not going to be the patrons there or whatever, but you know, you want to have somebody you can chat with and maybe you chat with their caddy and stuff. I go Abraham Answer.
Actually,
is one of my guys. Cause I want to one, see his short game around Augusta National. Two, I want to be hanging around Dale Trail, who just turned 35. Happy birthday. And
looks
see what
90.
He does and see what he does it there. And I know Abraham's a great guy. Just had a mutual journalist that, you know, interviewed him a few times or whatever. And I think he'd be a neat guy to hang out with. And then Cameron Champ, believe it or not, for a number of reasons. Cameron, obviously impressive off the tee. I know, you know, kind of his work ethic and what he's like a little bit from, again, a coach that I know that does some work with him on his putting stuff. And I think, too, even getting his perspective on Augusta National and everything that goes on there would be very intriguing as well. So for a lot more than, you know, just the golf. So I think those would be two guys that would be very interesting to play with.
I like it. Just sidebar. You know, you got to have G Max in there. Kevin Na, I think, is a sneaky good dude. So I could go through this whole list and you can,
Lowry in there. You know, you'd have a great time. Rory would probably be the biggest star that I would like to play with.
Yeah, Rory's definitely the star I'd like to play with. And Brooks Koepka's growing on me a little bit. He did an AMA the other day on his girlfriend's Instagram, and it was good. I think we've been reading him wrong. You know how I made the thing like. I think Phil's been in on the joke all these years. I think Bryson's been in on the joke for far too long.
Yeah, Brooks.
Brooks, sorry. No, yeah, Bryson has zero self-awareness. Next.
Yeah, exactly. All right, a good one there. Okay, on to question two here. This is a good one, too. Choose. Shoot 58 tomorrow on a regulation-length golf course or quit forever. And quit forever or keep playing forever, but never break par.
I don't break par ever anyway. So like, I may as well just keep doing that and enjoy the golf. Like if I shoot 58, unless it was on TV and every shot and it was literally a live stream that never turned away from me. Yeah. No one would believe it. Even if there was like 20 people there, they would think I paid them off. So no, it's just not happening. Yeah, no, let's just go with the never breaking par.
Yeah. I would take the latter as well. Because you get to keep playing. I think the problem is if you shoot 58, that's all you've got for the rest of your life.
Yeah, never
that's your only golf story. And believe me, people would get really sick of it after a while.
It's true. And like, this is obviously equal to what we're talking about here, but for the first time I shot 59 on a PGA Tour 2K20.
Oh, wow.
So obviously, you know, like, that's all I've been playing for.
Are we going to do a whole show on that? Or?
Well, maybe an extra.
Like an oral history?
Yeah, no, it was close. Like, I've had a couple 60s out there. But yeah, got that 59. It felt good.
Is this your press conference?
Yeah, that's it. I'm asking my own questions, as per usual.
All right, we'll move on to another one here. Another Masters-related one, which again, you know, it's going to be heavy for, yeah, actually the rest of them. Will a Canadian finish in the top 10 at the Masters? So we've got three of them, or four of them playing. Weir, Hadwin, Connors, and Taylor for the first time. Will any of those guys finish in the top 10?
Well, Weir's out, so now we got three. Corey loves the place, and he's got the game for it. Coming around a couple times there, made the cut. He's always deep. Like, he's shown he can do it. I know Kyle has taken this week off. He's at a wedding, and he's getting there early and doing a lot of preparation. And I think they're dialed in. I think these two have a game plan.
That's a yes then.
I'm gonna give it a yes. I'm giving it a yes. This is something I'm gonna sprinkle some donaires on. Speaking of Canadians that won me some money, Gligic top 20 last week in Bermuda. Had him top 10 and top 20, finished T11, still made about $25. Shot him text, thanked him for it. thanked me for my support. There we are. So maybe, hopefully I can send Corey that text in a few weeks.
You know what? I'm going to play the odds and just say no. I think you're right. I think Corey's probably the guy if there is a chance to do it, but, I'll go on the outside and say no. The top 10's a hard row to hoe. So I'm going to say no on that one. So I know I hate to be, it sounds like I'm anti-Canadian, but I'm not. I wish he would do it. I wish all four Canadians were in there, but I'm just going to go with the odds and answer the question.
That would be sweet. I think if we can get a two Canadian pairing come sometime on the weekend. I wouldn't throw it out there though that they throw all three of them together. Three of them together, two of them together, and two of them together in some sort of pairing this year. I wouldn't be surprised.
That'd be neat to see, that's for sure. I mean, obviously they're going to play a practice round together, but it'd be nice to carry over into the tournament. All right, number four here. This one I had to do a little research on. Is it true that Augusta National used to host a senior tour event?
Which I don't know. You probably played in it if it did. So why don't you answer the question?
Well, it's kind of my last name. There wasn't really a senior tour at the time, but the first senior PGA championships were played there in 1937 and 38. The club opened in 34. It was held in November and December those 2 years, interestingly. So this time of year, winter club, obviously. The winners were Jock Hutchison and Fred McLeod. No relation. It's MC as opposed to MAC. But I know his parents originally came from Skye, which is where my family came from in Scotland. Well, but
we could be playing this golf course.
Yeah, no.
You have a former winner in your family. They just don't know how to spell their name.
And then these two actually became the first honorary starters for the Masters. They did for the first 11 years. That tradition started in 1963. So technically, the senior tour events kind of got their start at Augusta National, believe it or not.
Love it.
All right, last one here, another Augusta one. Big surprise. We'll probably get a bunch more next week too. What is your favorite hole at Augusta National and why?
I'm going with number 11. I think it's really? It's a tough driving hole with a tough approach shot. And I think what also makes the tough approach shot even harder, A, the wind down there is swirling, but B, you see 12 and that's where things get real. And a lot of people pick 12, that par three, and you're like, oh, there it is. Like it's going to like, you know, you can think of so many things that happened on 12 that changed the Masters. I find that approach shot on 11 just kind of tricky, and it just turns it on for it. It's the start of the fun, right? Because you're turning, you got 12, which is fun. 13, you know, is it an eagle hole or is it a disaster, right? And then 14, you know, what's going to happen there? And then 15, is it an eagle hole or is it a disaster? And then 16, yeah. Like, is this going to, like, where's the pin? Hole in one location? Like, you got so many memories. I think for obviously a lot of us, you know, all we really remember is the back nine because that's kind of all we really saw. Now you get to see the whole course. But I think 11's the one I always think about as, like, when I picture myself playing there, for some reason, it's that approach shot on 11 with the pond on the left. You're way uphill. Is the ball below your feet? You know, I think it's a cool hole, and it's a tough one too. So I'm going with 11. I think it's a different pick.
Yeah, I think the back nine, you're right, because we saw that on TV for so long. We didn't see that front nine. It's really easy to you know, kind of look to that side. And I will for my favorite hole because of that. 13 is the one there for me versus 15. I love those both par fives. But, you know, 13 always required that tee shot where you're going to turn it. Then you don't necessarily have a flat lie going to the approach. And, you know, that green is obviously not flat in any possible way, but it was kind of cool to see. You know, players sometimes lay up, hit those cool little pitch shots, work the bank, depending on the hole location, sometimes end up in the creek if they went for it in two. And, you know, they get their shots up to the left side of the green that would end up rolling out and sometimes come down closer. Now, that said, if I was actually going to choose a second hole, which is not asked in this question, but I will.
But it's on our podcast and we will do what we want.
Right. So I'll go on the opposite side. And I really didn't appreciate this hole until I really saw it in person. And then I had a real appreciation for it, which is number three. It's a short par four, drivable now for some players at only about 350 yards. But the green is canted so steeply that it really requires a lot of precise shots. And even if you try to go for it off the tee, you can end up in a spot where you're beyond the hole. If the pin is over on the hard left side, that you might not even make four, and it becomes very, very difficult. So I think it's one of the coolest tests that's out there without having to be, you know, a monstrous length hole. It's not, you know, having to be a 500 yard par four like 11 has become, 505. Cool little hole.
Yeah, I like number three. That's cool. It definitely is drivable. I think they've also moved the tees up a couple times that kind of entice people to go for it.
Sure.
That's cool. If I'm picking a second one, I'm going two. I love the drive on two.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think
yeah.
It's
two
exciting.
Really cool. Yeah.
That bunker's out there. You got to draw it in, right? And if you draw it in perfectly, it's running down. And now you got this downhill shot that should be an easy shot to get there in two. But no, you're way downhill, and it's steep going down there. And again, I think it's also like one is okay, but I think one is just like, you know, okay, we've started. We're done, right? And now it's like two. Okay, this is Augusta National. I got to shape it. I got to shift it. I got a chance to go for it. Now I'm excited to watch right now, just thinking of those couple holes. Yeah, three is definitely one I had to look back up, but, you know, I'm going to go play 2K later. I'm going to play this Augusta National, and I will come back with my score, and people are really going to care. I like these questions. I have a feeling you're right. Next week is going to be very much heavily weighted towards the Masters, and I we got another bet next week we got to go over, because right now you're down two bets that you have yet to fulfill. So yeah, what's one more at this point? I think you might have to take the loser might have to take the winner out for dinner at this point.
It's probably looking that way.
Yeah, we might have to bring up the odds on next week. I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone. That was a great mailbag. Really appreciate your questions. If you've got more Augusta questions, certainly we'll take them next week. We'll put the call out again probably Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday as well. Get those questions in on Instagram and Twitter, and we'll be happy to answer them every week.
I love it. Well, why don't we get one more, Scott? Here's the question. What's your tip of the week for everybody?
All right. Well, basically, I worked on a tip this week that's on flagstick.com, but talking about managing the center of your body, the center of your mass to help control your wedges. So a lot of people think about wedges sometimes as being still a power shot, but really it's a finesse shot. So it's really important not to be worried so much about creating clubhead speed, but ensuring that you have proper contact, dynamic loft, and good low point control in your golf swing. So one of the things I'd like to get people to really focus on, especially with the wedges, this is not getting into mid irons, longer irons with changes, is really to control the center of their body. It's going to move move maybe 1 or 2 inches in your backswing as you put pressure into your trail leg, which again, you're not going to put a lot back there. And when I say pressure, a lot of people think of weight shift, but it's pressure. You're going to maybe get 55 or 60% going into your right leg. And that's all you really need. Right leg, if you're a right-handed golfer, trail leg, if you're left-handed, right-handed, whatever the case may be. It's not a power movement. We're not there to create a lot of speed. Basically, all you need is the factors to control the loft, control the strike, and you're going to be much better as far as your wedge control. And really critical this time of year, if you're still playing, especially if we've got soft, wet turf, we want to make sure that we're not hitting shots where we're getting the we're burying the club in behind the golf ball.
I like it. Wedges are important. They can save you a lot. Look at look at somebody like Brian Gay, right? That guy needs a lot of wedges because doesn't have a lot of distance. So making sure you practice them properly. I love it. Well, that's it for this week, folks. Next week, I'm sure we're going to have a lot. We got a lot planned. Might be a double episode next week. We got two great interviews lined up that I'm excited. Two different interviews. One more Masters preview. One more of the stories that we kind of told. Who knows? Maybe we'll combine them both. Maybe you'll see them separate. Maybe neither of these things will happen. I made this whole thing up. We really never know on this podcast. But we do know one thing for sure. Augusta National next week. The Masters in November. I'm excited, Scotty. Where's your head at right now? Going? Can you get through this weekend? Final rounds of golf potentially this week for us. I'm thinking of dusting off the sticks and finding somewhere to play on Thursday. You know, where's your head at? Do you want to get one more round in before before you go, before we watch the Masters?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. It would kind of set the feeling off sort of like being the springtime, really, more than anything, and make it more like what the Masters is rather than, you know, a Masters in November. But definitely excited. Can't wait to hear that music, that theme music being played.
That will be the intro next week, don't you? Maybe we'll just have it play the whole podcast. Just
that would be amazing. So yeah, I can't wait. Like our guest this week, Mark Silvers, I'll be glued to the TV and every digital aspect that I can absorb. So yeah,
can't I'm looking wait. Forward to it. Can't wait to watch, you know, one guy full round every shot on my computer while getting this. Whatever's on the TV, our boy James Duthie's going to be down there. We're looking forward to that. Just has a new book out as well, so make sure you check out that. We're big fans of that. And yeah, we just can't wait. So maybe you and I will see each other Thursday for a quick 18. Maybe we won't. Who knows? You never know. But we know one thing for sure. We'll be back next week to talk the Masters. We will have some sort of bet going on that Scott won't fulfill when he loses, as Perfect. Per usual. But until then, everyone have a great week. Be safe if you are down in the United States. Be kind to one another. You know, it's a tough world we're already living in. We don't need to make it any tougher. So let's leave it at that. We'll see you next week, folks. Boat's lost in the